Let's read this together, shall we? Psalm 131. My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me. But I have calmed and quieted myself. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and forevermore. Psalm 131, such an easy psalm to read, but such a difficult lesson to learn. I don't know if you're well up in your art. I don't know if you've heard of somebody called Thomas Cole. Have you heard of Thomas Cole? Now, Thomas Cole, he's an artist, painter, and he did a series of paintings called Voyages, or The Voyage of Life. And in each of these paintings, I'm going to show you them in a minute, he depicts the journey of life as if we're in a boat and we're heading through life towards eternity. He talks about childhood, youth, manhood, and old age. Here is the first of these. This is the voyage of life. This is childhood. This is the paint. I've zoomed in on the painting. I'll zoom out in a minute. But this is an infant just newly born in the boat. The boat is symbolizing this person's life. You'll see at the front of the boat, there's an hourglass symbolizing the length of time or life that this child might have. And the guardian angel is steering the boat. It's a time of great innocence. You're a baby. I'm sure maybe you've looked at a baby in a pram and thought in the middle of the rain, I wish that was me. I wish I could just lie snuggled up in a pram while my mum and dad look after me. It's a time of great innocence. If you zoom out, this is actually the picture itself as the baby emerges from the darkness of the womb or whatever. But it's a time of joy. It's a time of innocence, being cared for, being protected. The landscape is lush and green. There's flowers, and it's quite a good time. I'm sure many of us would love to go back to that time. Oh, that life was like this. The second one is this, youth. And in youth, the angel now stands on the shore, and the young person takes the rudder. And they're very zealous and enthusiastic. They're leaning forward. They're looking forward to what life has to give. We've had the privilege recently of being at two graduation services in university for our daughters. Every time I do it, I think, I wish I was back to their age. They're 20-odd. The whole world just seems to be ahead of them. A whole career. They're going to discover the cure for something. The life just seems, the energy they have, their mindset, they just seem to be full of energy. And the young guy or girl decides they will take. This is very much, they're in control. This is where they're going. I'll zoom out and let you see the picture. They're heading towards a celestial city, as it were. The world's their oyster, and off they go. If you can see, I don't know if you'll be able to see the picture very well. Above the angel's head, there is a river. And if you can see it clearly, it begins to get a bit choppy. At this time, the river's quite smooth. You can tell young folk life's going to be hard, but they're not convinced they will conquer it. Life's going to be not too bad. But we know life can be difficult. And this is the next one here. This is manhood. This made me laugh. The rudder's broken. And the painter says that in manhood, the only way that he can survive the journey in the vessel that's been tossed to and fro is through his faith and prayer. And it's a great truth, isn't it? And if you're an adult, and this, I'm looking around, this is all manhood, womanhood, you know, you can appreciate this is what life is often like. As we zoom out, the angel is still a bit unknown to the man, keeping an eye on him from behind, but the waters are choppy, and the only way that he's going to go through life is by prayer, by trusting in the Lord. And then you come to old age. The guardian angel returns. The waters are a bit calmer. Look at the boat now. The hourglass is gone. His time has run up out. And the boat's taken a bit of a bashing. But the angel is there, and you can, I don't know if you'll be able to see it, in the big glow, there is another angel there. And basically, he's taken to glory. He survived with God's help, the river, the voyages of life. I don't know about you, but I really liked those. I quite like them. They really make me think about life. It's like that childhood, innocent, protected, youth, watch me, here I go, adulthood, this is scary, Lord help me, life is pretty bumpy. And then you get to old age when your boat's taking a bit of a bashing, and there'll come a time when the Lord will say, I'm taking you back to glory. Your hourglass has run out, and off you go. The psalm we're looking at this morning is a song about life. It's about our walk, our journey with God. It's as big as that. It is as big as that. It's such a big, big psalm. We are looking at these 15 songs of ascent that the Jews sang three times a year on pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And each of the psalms tell us an aspect of life. We've only considered some in this, but these psalms, I've got so much out of these psalms. They speak of a time of fearfulness, anxiety, where does my help come from? Time of confusion, trying to build your house. Unless the Lord builds the house, we labor in vain. They all include big lessons, big experiences of life. How do we cope with these? And here is a big, big psalm before us this morning. It follows on from Psalm 130, you remember. The psalmist is walking with the Lord, but his sin separates him in his relationship between God and himself. Those times in our life when we're walking with the Lord, and it's not circumstances that get us down, it's our own personal sin. That's what Psalm 130 was all about. Lord, out of the depth. If you kept a record of sin, Lord, I couldn't stand. It's those times in our life when we become aware of our own personal sin, and it grieves us. Now, having been forgiven, you come to Psalm 131. How is this forgiven saint going to walk with the Lord? How is he going to journey through life? With him taking the rudder, with him being destroyed in the boat, how will he cope? And this is what this psalm is all about. It's about walking with the Lord in humility, walking with the Lord like a child, going back to almost to your childhood, knowing the care and protection of the Lord. Remember Jesus said, learn from me, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. We sometimes are like adults and we think, I can take the rudder or I can cope with this. And the simple truth is life is just too difficult. And it becomes far too awkward. And this is one of the hardest lessons to learn. Psalm 131 is probably the easiest of all the psalms to read. But it's one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, to learn from experience. Very, very much so. It's one of the hardest lessons. Spurgeon said of this, it is a short ladder, yet one that rises to a great height. It's only got three rungs in it. But if you know what it's actually saying, if you're able to ascend these rungs, you will be a spiritual giant. And that's what this one is looking at. It's a psalm of personal testimony of David, who has learned what it means to be content in the Lord. Look at verse 2. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. He's learned what it means to be content. Paul said the same thing, in Philippians. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. He's saying the same thing. In life, he's got to a point where he wasn't content, but now he's content. And it's a great place to be. And the simple truth is this. The Lord wants each of us to grow into maturity. When we become a Christian, we're babes in Christ. We have so much to learn in life, but also how God relates to us throughout youth and adulthood and old age. We are constantly learning how we are to relate to God during those times. Do we take the rudder ourselves? Watch me, Lord, I can do this. I'm very gifted. I'm capable. Or do we quickly give the rudder to Him? Do we stop fighting with Him? And do we let Him take over? That is what this psalm is. It's learning to be content, to rest in the Lord, and to walk with Him like a child once again. And that's what we're looking at just now. The problem comes when we think we have grown up. That's when we get into trouble, isn't it? I remember being a teenager. I remember my daughters being a teenager. And there are certain stages in life where you think, well, I know all. You can tell us nothing. Teenagers are sometimes hard because they don't know who Sam Fender is. They think you don't have a clue. I was looking at, there was something on the TV. It was a festival somewhere. And I said to Lucille, it wasn't that long ago. I seemed to know everybody who was a pop star or whatever. They must have written about 30 names. I never heard of a single one of them. And young folks think, well, that's just mum and dad. They don't have a clue. But we have a clue. We know where we're going. And life is like this. We can take this whole attitude into life. And you can be here this morning saying, Lord, I'm capable. I can do it. I'm gifted. And here is a psalm of 3 verses that is very short but rises to a great height. This is the secret of the contented life. It really is quite something. So let's consider this then, this battle that we have between the flesh and the spirit as in our walk with God, as we advance to spiritual maturity. That's what really we're looking at here. So first of all then, I've called this like a weaned child. This is really what this is about. And so the first one is the signs of immaturity. David mentions 3 things in this psalm that perhaps he once was, but he says here he is no longer. The first one is this, pride. Look at verse 1. My heart is not proud. As it says, the problem is when we grow and we are youthful and young adults, or even as we go through life, we learn new skills. These skills make us very competent. We learn certain things, we pick up certain things as we go through life. We become good at certain things. The problem is when we have an overinflated opinion of what that is, who we are as a result of them. We become proficient and so forth. And what happens is pride is never far from any one of us. If you know anything of your own heart, you will know this to be true. This is quite something to be able to say, my heart is not proud. How many of us could stand up and share that as their testimony? Pastor, I'd just like to stand and say, I am not proud. I'm sure members of your family might stand up and say, yes, they are, or whatever. Whether it's a pastor, elders, deacons, whatever. This is something that easily besets human nature. It's this painting painted about the young youth charging ahead, and it's only when you come to an end of yourself you realize that you're getting yourself into trouble. I remember in my last church there was a woman, she'd just been saved, and we were talking about pride, and she says, I don't see anything wrong in pride. What's wrong with pride? It just seemed, if you've been a Christian for a long time, you just go, whoa, there's loads of things wrong with pride. But she was thinking of the graduation service and your daughter's gone up and you're going, I'm proud of them. It's not talking of that. It's talking about an overinflated opinion of herself, that we are better than we really are. Paul says, for by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, and note that every one of you in Romans, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment. And that is just the problem. The more gifted we are, this becomes a problem for us. People who are naturally gifted, who can achieve much, who have achieved much, who know a lot of things, we feel we have certain rights. Don't these people recognize who I am? I am better than this. I don't deserve this, and so forth. And even before the Lord, Lord, watch me. I can do this. I am capable. And that's what we have here. David had much success in life, and he must have been tempted to be proud, chosen by God, not for the football team, but to be king of Israel. David and Goliath, he was anointed king over Israel, status. He had many blessings, many victories, many possessions. But we don't get the impression that in David's life that he was proud of this. You don't really read it. And if you look at his Psalms, a lot of them have to do with humility. But according to him, he has learned this. I have calmed and quieted myself. He's had to do this because he knows this is the temptation. He must have been at one time, I am now like a weaned child with its mother. He's moved from the attitude of a king to the attitude of a baby, to a child. And the thing is, we're all prone to this, an overinflated opinion of ourselves that builds up over many years. And the more we achieve, the more we live. And it's a constant battle we will have between now and the grave. Pride. It's the oldest sin in the world. It was what got Satan thrown out of heaven. It's what got Adam thrown out of the garden. It will be the last sin to go. Pride. It's the one thing that many other sins stem from. And if we can see this in ourselves, we are on the way to maturity. Like the adult looking back to the youth and say, well, all the best steering the boat yourself. Look, I have no rudder. Life is hard. This has happened. And yet we have to learn this. We have to grow. We have to become maturity, to become mature. The Lord takes pride very seriously. Proverbs 16, the Lord detests all the proud of heart. James 4, that is why the scripture says God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. He opposes, he detests. This should be a real warning sign to each one of us. Is there pride in our life? And if you know your own heart, you know there will be. I see it in myself. I see it in others. We all don't often see it in ourselves. We can see it in others. We're great at seeing it in others, but not always in ourselves. And Lord, I'm glad I'm not like this man. I am not proud. The simple truth is, if you know your own heart, and that is the beginning, know your own heart. There'll be elements of pride in there that you know better, that you deserve better. Secondly, linked to this, he mentions this, self-importance. It's the word haughty. My heart is not proud, and my eyes are not haughty. Haughty, the word haughty just means arrogance. It's an expression of pride. It's how pride shows itself. It goes beyond pride. And what it does is it looks down on others. It's how pride often shows itself. The word haughty means high. And if you're reading the ESV, it says, my eyes are not raised too high. That's probably a better translation. It hits it in the head. You're not up here looking down. I'm up here and I'm looking down. That's what pride can do. It makes you haughty. You are important. You deserve better. Do people not recognize who you are? Or does God not realize I'm in control? I can do this. I am important. It's a way that pride shows itself in relation to God and in relation to each other. David mentions this. If he was proud at one time, he must have been arrogant. He must have been haughty. And he says, now that is not the case. He's grown into maturity. He mentions a third thing. And the third thing is ambition. He mentions ambition. I do not concern myself, verse 1, with matters, great matters or things too wonderful for me. Pride and self-importance often show themselves in making us feel we know it all, that we do concern ourselves with great matters, with things too wonderful, and we have an answer for everything, a solution for everything, and it's there, isn't it? We speak to somebody, no, this is the way it is. I know, I understand all things. And it's such a subtle thing, but it follows on. It's a very real problem for humans. David, once again, doesn't come across as somebody who knows it all. You remember when David, when he was a youth, called him to be king of Israel. It didn't happen the next day. He had to wait. And if you read his Psalms, you don't get the impression of him saying, "Lord, how long? You have said, I'm important, I'm ambitious, I want to concern myself with great matters. Lord, I think you should have done it this way." He's humble. He's prepared to receive the crown in God's way and in God's time. He was content to be pursued by Paul for 10 years. Well, I think if I was told I was going to be king, I wouldn't expect 10 years of living in the wilderness, frightened for my life. But he is like a weaned child, and he accepts this. Not only that, then he's the king. He rules over a very tiny principality of Hebron for 7 years, and eventually becoming the ruler of the United Kingdom. Not this United Kingdom, but Israel and Judah. He becomes ruler there. He didn't concern himself with matters too great for him. In other words, he didn't concern himself with the hidden purposes of God. Isn't that quite a lesson? I sometimes wonder, Lord, what are you doing in my life? Lord, could you not have done it at 3:30 yesterday? That would have been quite good. Or see you next week. I'm okay for a couple of days, but when I get to Thursday, that is the great things of God, God's HQ, God's blueprint. And he says, I've got to the point where I don't understand the way God works, but I'm prepared to trust him that he has the rudder. I don't have the rudder. He has the rudder of my life, and he will steer whenever and however. I need to be humble, and I need to stop being so important. Lord, I deserve better. Lord, I know better. These are the biggest lessons we will ever learn in life. If we can learn them, your whole life will take a completely different journey. And that's what this psalm is about. Three verses. I looked at this and I thought, Lord, make these three verses real in my life. And yet, even if they're real today, you'll struggle with them tomorrow. Such is the human condition. And that is what David is saying. This is how immaturity shows itself. We're proud, we know it all, we deserve better, we're self-important, and we think God should do this way. We have all the answers. We concern ourselves with great matters. We have the solution to the answers to many things, whether it's just talking to somebody about something, your opinion over their opinion, or God's. We find it hard to walk with God. That's what really this is saying, signs of immaturity. So let's move on quickly to signs of maturity. And you'll not be surprised to see that the first one is humility. But I want you to note verse 2. This growth into maturity depends on us. God will not do this for us. It says, I have calmed and quieted myself. Pride, self-importance, ambition is a turmoil in our life. It puts us on like the manhood role, the kind of storms, and we're all over the place. It's fearful anxiety. Pride does that. Self-importance does that. Selfish ambition does that. But David says he did something about it. He calmed and quieted himself. How did he do this? With humility. My heart is not proud. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with matters too great for me. I mentioned every one of us should think of ourselves not more highly than we ought, but with sober judgment. And he says this, every one of us. It is a real problem. Humility is a real problem. 1 Peter 5 says the same thing. Humble yourself, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. James 4, humble yourself before the Lord, and he will lift you up. It begins with a recognition that pride is in my heart, it is in your heart. And we are concerned only with the pride that's in our own heart. Sometimes we're very quick to point out the pride in somebody else's heart, but there's pride in all our hearts. And that is the thing. It begins with this recognition that this is a problem in our life. We are not to be haughty, but rather, here's, remember Philippians 2, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility, value others above yourself. And that is where this begins, that spirit of humility. Secondly, peace. A sign of maturity is one of peace. The result of humility, peace comes. David mentions a few things here. Look at verse 2. Calmness and quietness. Calmness and quietness. I don't know about you, but I want that. A life of calm. A life of quiet. When we are humble, when we give the Lord the rudder of our life, when we dispel everything that we once had in verse 1, your life becomes calm and it becomes quiet. The tension goes. You're no longer number one. You're not striving for yourself and your own voice to be heard. You come in humility. Humility lays down our weapons before God and before others. We don't care if we're recognized or not. We don't care what people think of us. All that matters is that we live a life worthy of the Lord. You remember David and Saul? David was getting a name for himself. There was a battle and so forth. There was the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant came from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David, and he was rejoicing. And you remember verse 14 of 2 Samuel 6, wearing a linen ephod, David was dancing before the Lord with all his might. And you remember what happens? Michal, the daughter of Saul, was watching from the window, and when she saw David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. She thought, what a plonker. He is the king. Look at him. He's dancing with a ephod on, and he's acting like an idiot. And then when he returns home in verse 20, David said to, she says to him, how the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants as any vulgar fellow would. In other words, she's embarrassed at him. But he's not embarrassed. He has no pride. All he wants to do, he doesn't care what people think of him. He wants to serve the Lord. He says, it was before the Lord who chose me rather than your father or anyone from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this. And I will be, what's the word? Humiliated. I am prepared to be humiliated as long as God is glorified. That is a place of great maturity, isn't it? That God is glorified through our humility. Humility doesn't care about being recognized or being impressive. It seeks the glory of God. And David tells us in this passage why this is so difficult. Verse 2, I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. The emphasis here is not on the word child. The emphasis is on the word weaned. If those of you who are mothers who have weaned children, they're usually weaned, certainly in the Old Testament, about 3 years old. Once the baby has to move from mum's milk to a different type of food, from sitting in the mum's arms to sitting in a high chair, that can be a battle. It's not easy. The transition, somebody has said, from sucking infant to a weaned child, from squalling baby to quiet son or daughter is not smooth. It is stormy and noisy. The other commentator says, it's no easy thing to quiet yourself. Sooner may we calm the sea or rule the wind or tame a tiger than quieten ourselves. It's a pitched battle. The baby's denied certain comforts and flies into a rage, sinks into a sulk. There are sobs, there are struggles. The infant is facing its first great sorrow, and it is in sore distress. You're trying to prepare the baby for coming out of that boat, and it's in distress. It doesn't like what's happening. James says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires? This is the human condition, isn't it? We want things a particular way. And when God does something in our life, we struggle with God in this. Lord, what are you doing? What are you doing? I liked it this way. The sea was calm. Now the sea's stormy. I really don't like this. And we are being weaned. I remember as a young Christian, I used to get so many answers to prayers very early on. I just thought the Christian life was easy. I'd just pray for somebody and something would happen. In the first 3 or 4 months this was, didn't last for years, but I remember thinking, isn't this great? You pray for things. And then you realize that it doesn't always happen that way. And your own sin is there and your own pride and you're confessing. And you realize walking, steering the ship is very hard. It is very, very hard. And the Lord will wean you. He will cause you to stand on the truth, the solid meat of his word. You don't always get the warm fuzzies, the warm arms around you. He's asking you to stand. He's causing you to stand in your own two feet. John, sit in the high chair. I'm going to feed you differently from before. You're not going to like it, but it's actually better for you. It will cause you to grow. The attitude of the immature believer is we don't like things. We don't like things happening, so we do this. There's a wee phrase, isn't there, about throwing the toys out the pram or spitting the dummy. It's what kids do. I still laugh every time I see a wee baby with a dummy and they just go, and they just spits out. It's just a funny thing to see. And you just see the babies going, I'm leaving you no doubt, this is not what I want. I don't want this. I want that other thing. And we are like this. It's very easy. I do this. I'm sure you do this as well. We can easily behave in that way. And we need to, what David is saying, I've learned to stop fighting. Stop fighting, God. I've learned to stop fighting. And weaning's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But it's hard to do this. How many of us don't struggle with the Lord? We don't always trust him. We don't always know what he's doing. And we have to swallow our pride, and we have to swallow our self-importance and give the rudder back to the Lord and say, Lord, you steer it, you lead, you guide. The problem is we don't want to be a baby. There's something wired within us that feels that we can control it. Lord, I want to be an adult. We think an adult is taking charge. An adult has gone back to childhood and doing it that. Remember Jesus? Do you remember Jesus told it took a child and brought the child in their midst? Do you remember the context of that? He did this after the disciples were discussing among themselves who was the greatest. Lord, am I better than him? Lord, I must be better than him. I mean, he's no as good as me. He's right and I'm wrong. And this is what they were trying to do, 12 disciples, trying to place themselves. You're first, you're seventh, you're 11th, you're 12th. But who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? At that time, the disciples came to Jesus, Matthew 18, and asked, who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He called a little child. I like that. Notice the word little. A little child to him. And placed the child among them. Quite a visual aid, isn't it? He takes Elijah or whatever and stands him among them. He says, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. He does this not to show the child's helplessness, but to show the child's willingness to be led and to be taught. And it's a great thing to see. We had a great time with Olin Dippo, and it was great seeing young Elijah. I hope they don't mind me using him as an illustration. And bedtime came. It was such a delight to see. If you know Elijah, he speaks through his eyes. You just know he's thinking. And right, Elijah, off to bed. And you could see it wasn't what he wanted. But he didn't go in a tantrum. He just stood. And what other parents might have said, well, you're coming with me, off you come, and that's it, whether you like it or not. Some parents would do that. But Olin Dippo just says, well, you know you need to come. And you could see him thinking it through. I don't want to, but I know my mum and dad know what's best for me. You could see this in his eyes. And it must have lasted for about 3 or 4 minutes. He just stood and he's gone, oh, I don't want it. But I know that it's right, but I don't want it. And it was such a delight to see. They didn't have to pick him up and take him. He eventually just went. And he just followed his mum and dad And I thought, that's such a picture of humility. But even at an early age, you're seeing a battle of wills begin. I'm thinking it through. I don't get it. Don't understand it. I'd rather have this. But somehow I know that this is good for me because you've so many good things for me in the past, so I'm going to walk. This is what it means to be mature in the Lord, to become a child again, to become a child, not only in childlike trust, but in so many other areas. The Lord wants us back in the first boat to let him steer us and guide us, the guardian angel, to have the flowers up the side. It's only when we take charge, we sail into choppy waters, and the only way we can survive is constantly saying, Lord, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me, help me, help me. That is the Christian life. But may we be able to say with David, I am not proud. My heart is not haughty. I do not concern myself with matters too great for me. I have calmed, quieted myself like a weaned child. May the Lord help us to do this. Let's stand and we'll sing, Yet Not I, But Through Christ in Me.